SEC fans, this is John Crist from Saturday Down South. Welcome to another installment of the SDS Podcast. Coming to you from the iHeartMedia Studio, WDAE in Tampa, Florida, 620 AM and 95.3 FM. You can follow me on Twitter at SaturdayJC. Our guest for this episode, former LSU running back Jacob Hester. He's currently an analyst doing some radio and television coverage of the Bayou Bengals. Be sure to follow him on Twitter at JacobHester22. Jacob, thank you so much for joining today's program.
Oh, absolutely. Anytime.
All right. Before we get started, the Saturday Down South podcast is brought to you by MyBookie.ag. For as long as we've been covering college football, people always ask me for predictions and picks against the spread. Well, one of the key things that people don't always mention is it's not only who you bet on, but it's where you bet. That makes a big difference. And we've always sent our folks to MyBookie.ag. MyBookie has been in the business for years. They have a fantastic reputation. They offer 100% cash bonuses, so you are in the black from the jump. Most importantly, they have some of the fastest payouts in the industry, just two business days. No more waiting weeks for a paper check from God knows where. This week has a few lines that are very interesting, especially Georgia opening up as a 6.5-point dog against Notre Dame. MyBookie's all-new mobile site makes placing bets a breeze. Join MyBookie now, get in on the action, and they're going to match your deposit up to 100%. Use the promo code SDS to activate this offer for week two of the college football season. That's promo code SDS. Visit MyBookie.ag today. And now Jacob Hester. Jacob, the Tigers are coming off a very impressive shutout victory over BYU in Houston after the game had to be moved, of course. But I'm sorry, the game was in New Orleans, but I was supposed to be in Houston. Like, all this hurricane stuff is so confusing. But just your initial thoughts on your alma mater moving to 1-0.
Well, I thought they looked good doing it, and I thought they looked good in all three phases. And obviously, everybody wanted to see the new offense under Matt Canada. They wanted to see, you know, how much it was going to change from when Cam Cameron was running the offense. And he did a lot of good things. Now, he didn't have to empty his playbook, that's for sure. But he did enough, and he did what BYU was giving him. And so the offense, I thought, looked really good. I thought Danny Etling looked good. I thought he was putting balls in places that last year he, you know, might not could have gotten the ball there. And obviously he had the back issue and things like that we found out in the off season. But and defensively, I mean, when you don't let a team get past the 50-yard line, obviously you're doing something right and held BYU to 97 yards. So that speaks for itself. But they're starting a couple of freshmen out there too. So I think that's, you know, one of the more impressive things that they did. And we're not talking about redshirt freshmen. We're talking about guys that got there in June and already starting and making an impact.
Now, it's not an understatement to say that Coach Canada, the new offensive coordinator, probably the most important coaching hire in the entire league for this season, especially if at a coordinator spot. And I think that, you know, people were very excited going into the spring game, but from what we saw on TV before Mother Nature took over, it really wasn't pretty. Yes, things looked different. It was nice to see all the shifts and the motions and just a little bit of a better pace, but the passing game still struggled and the defense still dominated. Were there real reasons to be concerned from what we saw in the spring game, or did you figure, you know, the kinks are still being worked out? We have a whole fall camp to get ready for week one.
Well, you know, I can tell you if you're on the outside looking in and you're not able to go to those, you know, practices in July and August in which the media was held out, I guess you did have a little cause to worry when you saw the spring game because it wasn't pretty. It was a defense that was dominating the offense, and a lot of LSU fans are probably thinking, here we go again. But if you were there and able to be at those practices in July and August, the offense was really getting the better hand of the defense more times than not. And anytime you do that against the LSU, you know you're doing something right. You know, the playbook is going to be a lot bigger than you saw in BYU. And I was actually doing interviews at the locker room after the game, and one of the defensive starters looked at one of the offensive starters and said, "Hey, where's all that stuff where y'all were scoring on us during training camp? Where was all those plays at?" So there's plenty left in the playbook. They did what they had to do to win and still had a really nice night offensively.
Now, speaking of the playbook in particular, you and I have traded messages in the past about your precious power pitch. and it's one of my favorite plays in college football. It's so unique. It seems like the Bayou Bengals are like the only team in the country that still run it. It's just a part of what that program is, and that's what I envision when I think of an LSU running back, whether it's a decade plus ago with you or very recently with a guy like Darius Geis. Just try to describe the X's and O's of that particular play and why it's become just a part of that program there in Baton Rouge.
Well, you know, probably more than any play, that's the one that I usually get asked about. Because like you said, like, it's unique, right? But what's not unique is the power, right? Everybody in America, be it spread, be it pro, doesn't matter what kind of formations you run, everybody in America runs power. LSU just likes to get to it a different way. And obviously, you won't see it near as much as you have in the past. But originally, it was just a way for the running back to get the ball in his hands and be able to read it quicker. Because when you're running power, you're looking A-gap to expand, and if the A-gap's not there, obviously, you keep going until you find the gap. Well, you know, it is tough when you're getting the ball in a handoff formation, opposed to you get the pitch, you get a little bit longer to take a look at it. I'll agree, it's funky looking. Nobody else runs it, but that's kind of the thought of it, is give the running back a little bit more time to be able to see it develop.
Now, true or false, when Coach Canada comes in and takes over for Coach Cameron, you internally think to yourself, Coach, you can do whatever the hell you want with a playbook, but keep that sucker in there.
Oh, yeah, a little part of me, you know. I mean, hey, like you said, no matter if it's 10 years ago with me, if it's Jeremy Hill, if it's Fournette, guys, all of us have run it. All of us have had success with the play, and it's something that all of us have in common. But I tell you what, if Matt Canada comes out here and scoring 40 points a game, I don't care what play he's calling.
Now, I haven't put on a pair of shoulder pads since I was 17 years old. I was more baseball player than football player, but I like to think I got a pretty decent understanding of the X's and O's. And back when I was playing, for the most part, it was still man-on-man in terms of the blocking schemes. And I remember, say, you know, a 44 was like a lead run to the tailback, and your right tackle was going to push out the end, and your right guard was going to push in the tackle, and you're going to create some space there. And it was your job as the fullback to maybe take out that linebacker, and then you got yourself a big play. Well, now it seems like everybody is in a zone scheme, and it's not a man-to-man scheme, and it's more about just kind of occupying space and looking for cutback lanes. Just in somewhat layman's terms, from a running back's perspective, a man scheme versus a zone scheme, and just how different the running game as a whole is in this 21st century brand of football.
No, you're absolutely right. Used to, you would see more of what is a natural fullback lead play, like you said. I mean, it's linebacker and fullback are taking five-yard sprints at each other, and they're seeing who can move who out of the hole. Where now you're seeing where the fullback has a little bit more flexibility. He can bend it all the way back if he sees it. And almost now what you have, if you have a fullback, or, you know, what people are calling an F-back, H-back, whatever you want to call it, they're giving those guys freedom to kind of dictate where the run goes. And you watch LSU, and J.D. Moore is probably the best in the country at it. He can start on the right side, and he can bend that thing all the way back to the left, cut off the backside defensive end if that's the biggest threat, and the running back's just going to follow him. And so that's what you get with a zone run. You're going to have a lot more freedom to kind of create your own run, where opposed to if you're running lead stretch or something, you pretty much got one or two places you can go.
Now, the fullback position as a whole at the college game is sort of going the way of the dodo bird, and I know you can't be happy about that. Now, you were a primary ball carrier as well, and a 1,000-yard guy as a senior, but you go to the NFL, and whether it's the Chargers or the Broncos, you're primarily a blocker, a lead blocker, a fullback type of guy, maybe catching some stuff out of the backfield. But just watching college football today and the position that you've gotten accustomed to and how you earn some pretty healthy paychecks, it's just, it's not really there anymore. Even programs like an LSU or my alma mater of Florida State that does run a pro-style scheme and does employ some fullbacks, they might only be on the field for about 20 snaps a game. I imagine it's got to be a little bit disconcerting, and it sort of hurts the heart a little bit.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. And I know towards the end of my NFL career, me and my agent were looking at it, and there was only like 17 teams that even carried a fullback, right? I mean, 32 teams and only 17 were carrying one, much less carrying two. So there was only 17 spots in the entire world for fullbacks. And so it was a competitive market, to say the least. And what they're doing is now they're using their third tight end as a fullback. And no disrespect to any tight ends out there, but a tight end can't do what a fullback can, because nine times out of ten, that fullback has played running back at some point in his life, be it high school, be it college. And so he's got a feel of what the running back's trying to do. He's got a feel of what the running back's expecting to do. And so I can tell you, we had Randy McMichael, who's one of the better tight ends I've ever played with in San Diego, and they would ask him to do some fullback stuff. And, man, he would get so mad. He's like, why can't y'all just tell Jacob to go out there and do it? You know, I'm a tight end, and so they don't like to do it either. So, but that's where the game is, and that's where it's at. Now fullbacks are 6'5", 260, opposed to, 5'11", 240.
Now we have to talk, of course, about the tailback position currently in Baton Rouge. You have Leonard Fournette, who takes off a year early to the NFL. He's replaced by Darius Geis. I asked this a couple episodes ago with Jordy Hultberg, a former basketball player at LSU, radio legend there in the area, just what it's like to go from a Leonard Fournette to a Darius Geis from year after year at the same position, and just how incredibly fortunate you have to be at that particular position. And I equated it to Stanford. It's almost like, imagine Stanford going from John Elway, and the very next year you get Andrew Luck come in. It doesn't happen that often. Just talk about these two particular young men, one after another, and what it's done for that program.
It's pretty amazing when you look at it, and you can even say, hey, throw Jeremy Hill in there, and you go Hill, Leonard Fournette, Darius Geis. I mean, come on, that's not even fair, right? And but these two guys here, I mean, Leonard Fournette, everybody knows who he is. You're not a top five NFL draft pick without having the talent like he has and what he's able to do on football field. But, hey, you know, Darius is different. I can't really ever say I've seen a running back that has all the skill sets that Darius has. You're talking about a kid who's, 220 pounds, can obviously run through you. He can obviously, run by you as well. And he can also make you miss in a unique way. He's got the spin move. He's got the sidestep. He's got a juke step. I mean, there's literally nothing this kid can't do. And it's just impressive because he's, like I said, 220-pound back, shouldn't be able to finish runs and leave corners in the dust like he does. But he's got everything you can ask for in a running back. He's also a good third-down pass blocker. And so the sky's the limit with Darius Geis. And I've played with some really good running backs in my career, and he's right there at the top.
Now, I just can't imagine how this works, but you mentioned Leonard Fournette as the number four overall pick in the draft to the Jacksonville Jaguars. They're expecting him to be a star and carry that team right away. But Darius Geis is right behind him, and I can't believe how many people I talk to, whether it's just LSU fans, people who read my stuff, or it's people in the industry, and almost to a man, they're expecting Geis to be better by the time he leaves the program. Maybe a better college player, maybe a better pro down the road. It almost seems a little disrespectful to Leonard Fournette and what he did. I mean, it wasn't that long ago everybody said he was the greatest to ever wear the purple and gold.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting case, and that's for sure. And that's, a question I usually get asked a lot. And I really just think it depends on, what scheme these guys end up in the NFL. Obviously, I think Leonard's kind of bread and butter is power runs, zone runs with an extra blocker. He's an outstanding stretch runner, but Darius is more of a guy who can, take a carry out of the backfield and shotgun. And he can catch a swing pass or catch a screen pass and, make that big play. So as much as the, similarities they do have, Darius is almost a little bit more scatty than Leonard is. But I'll tell you what, I'll take both of them on my team any day.
Yeah, you might need two footballs if you have both of them, of course. One thing you mentioned as well when it comes to Geis is his ability to pick up blockers and help in the passing game in that regard. I think a lot of fans, they watch football broadcasts and they'll hear about a special freshman tailback on the horizon, and maybe he has trouble getting on the field, say, in passing situations because he can't help out as a blocker necessarily. Try to tell our listeners what's that like at that particular position, just in terms of the responsibilities that you have, because they can really change on the fly. An example I can think of is, every now and then you might be running, a rollout or a waggle off a play fake or something like that. But if you see a linebacker coming in untouched and he slips past the guard, you have to abandon that play fake altogether and go take out that linebacker. Young guys don't necessarily do that. So give us a couple of examples of the growth that you need as a blocker at that position and how it can't always be taught A, B, and C. This is what you're going to see on game day.
Oh, yeah, you're exactly right. And look, it doesn't matter if you're a freshman in high school, freshman in college, or a rookie in the NFL. You will not get on the field if you can't be a great pass blocker and if you can't make adjustments. And so many times young guys with outstanding running ability don't see the field because they're not willing to be a pass blocker. And it has to be something you are just as dedicated to, or maybe even more than your run plays, right? I can tell you, playing for Peyton Manning, if you're not a willing pass blocker and you're not somebody that when a linebacker is blitzing, he knows he doesn't have to worry about it, you won't see the field. You just won't. Doesn't matter how talented you are. Doesn't matter if you're the best running back to ever touch a ball in the run game. You just won't play. And so it's got to be something that you got to be willing to do. And, you know, as far as Darius came from a high school Catholic in Baton Rouge. That is one of the better programs in the state and is one of the most well-coached programs in the state. So it's something where he had a leg up on maybe any other running back coming in because of where he came from. And it's got to be something you got to be willing to do, and Darius is willing to do it. I think he enjoys picking up a blitz as much as he does running a touchdown.
You're listening to the Saturday Down South podcast. Our guest is former LSU running back Jacob Hester. The SDS podcast is brought to you by Ticket City. College football is here. Finally, there are some fantastic matchups in the SEC, even beyond what we saw in week one. Georgia-Notre Dame highlights the slate. I am going to that game. I absolutely cannot wait. We've been working with Ticket City for quite some time. Now is the time to get your tickets. They are the experts in the field, having served over 1.5 million customers. They're the place to go, and they have been for 30 years. And now they're offering $20 off for all of our podcast listeners. All you need to do is go to TicketCity.com, enter the discount code SDS20 at checkout. You're going to get $20 off of your order. Again, that is TicketCity.com. Discount code SDS20. Okay, Jacob, we have to talk about the coaching situation at the top in Baton Rouge. Of course, Ed Orgeron comes in and he wins the offseason on the booster tour all over the Pelican State. He's a local. Everybody loves him. The joke is that, of course, he's the first LSU coach that does not have an accent, which sounds strange to guys like me when you hear him on the conference call every Wednesday. But I just have to wonder if the fact that he is a local guy, the fact that he wanted this job for all the right reasons, is that going to extend him a little more rope in the eyes of the fans? Or is it still, look, coach, you've got to win these games. And if you're 2-2 in September, you're going to be hearing it whether you like it or not, even if this is your first year on the job full time.
Oh, yeah, no, it's a great question, and you could look at it a bunch of different ways. But him being from La Rose, Louisiana, it means something, right? And these people are absolutely in love with Coach Orgeron. And it says something about him because, like, he wanted a job. There was no other job in the country that he could have been offered that he would have taken over the LSU job, right? And be it Tom Herman or Jimbo Fisher, the guys that, you know, he was up for against the job, and you shouldn't have to convince anybody to come to LSU in my mind, right? It's a program where if you get offered the job, you should want it. You know, those guys were having to take some convincing. Coach Orgeron wanted the job, and so when that process was going on, as an LSU alum, you know, take the analyst out of it, that's who I wanted to lead my former alma mater, right? So he's done a great job so far, like you said. He killed the offseason. Everywhere he went, people loved him. He said the right things, and I think he's doing the right things. He's changing things up. He's not just doing it the same way it's always been done. And everybody so far is loving him. And like you said, if he goes 2-2 in September, we'll see how that goes. But I do think he has a little bit bigger of a leash than any other coach.
La Rose, Louisiana. If you listen to the Saturday Down South podcast, we sent a couple of our guys there over the summer just to spend some time in that neck of the woods and talk to some of Coach O's old friends, get a feel for where he grew up, the types of things he did as a young man, and what molded him into the person he is today. There's probably a lot of people across the country, tourists and the like, who've been in New Orleans and hung out on Bourbon Street. Maybe they've even been to Death Valley for a game under the lights in the fall. But La Rose, Louisiana, you're from Shreveport, which probably feels like Paris to a place like La Rose. Try to give me a sample of what La Rose, Louisiana is like on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, look, you said it right. When people think of Louisiana, they think New Orleans, they think Bourbon Street, they think Mardi Gras. They think party, and they think all things like this. And there's so many different parts of Louisiana. We're a very unique state, and where I'm from in the northwest corner of Shreveport is going to be totally different than La Rose, Louisiana. La Rose, Louisiana is a great place with hardworking people, people that love their Cajun food, people that love their outdoorsman stuff. And, I mean, that's a place where when you go to high school, you don't pull up in a car, right? You pull up in a P-Row boat, tie it off, get out and walk to school. And it's what kind of place it is. I mean, when they say it's on the bayou, it's on the bayou, and there's some great people and have a lot of fun down there.
Now, I have to ask you about your head coach and the former coach of that program, of course, and that is, I tell you what, I don't know if you're in on the Twitter feed for Les Miles, but it really was a treat Monday night for Georgia Tech, Tennessee. Just, yeah, Coach Miles live tweeting a football game is a delight. Tell me about the relationship you have with him these days and just what it was like watching him get pushed out of that job. Look, you were with this guy and won a national championship. He's always going to be a legend, but the last couple of years were very ugly. I don't know how you felt about hitting the eject button. Maybe it had to be done, maybe it didn't, but we are where we are. And just your experience as being one of his more high-profile alums.
Oh, well, I have an outstanding relationship with Coach Miles and still do to this day. I have four sons, and my youngest son is named Memphis Miles after Coach Miles.
No kidding.
He's another father figure to me, and so our relationship will always be a strong one. I had him on my radio show 2 days ago, and we sat there, and we almost talked the whole radio show, and we had to wrap it up, but we were still going, right? And so he's been great to me. He always has been from the first day I met him. And, yeah, of course it's tough, right? I'm covering the team, so I have to be objective. I have to, you know, say the truth. I can't, you know, hide behind my purple and gold glasses. And when he was let go, it was a tough day at the Hester household, I promise you. But, you know, right now, I think he's in a good place. I think he's enjoying what he's doing. I think the country's enjoying what he's doing, covering these games, tweeting, different things like that. So I think he has found an outstanding niche for him. You know, will he be on the sidelines again as a head coach? I think he deserves a shot. I don't know if he will be. Obviously, the game it keeps getting younger and younger. But and also on the flip side, I'll tell you what, I'm excited that Ed Orgeron's the head coach of LSU. And so I think right now we're at, I think everybody's in a good place. And no matter how much success you have after a while, you know, maybe some change is needed, right? And so as hard as it was to take, if you look back almost a year later, and where everybody's at in their life, she's thinking, oh, well, maybe it was for the best, or maybe it was a time for Coach Miles to have, you know, the pressure of being the head coach at LSU and everything that comes with it. Maybe it's good for everybody.
Yeah, the Coach Miles stream of consciousness on Twitter, an absolute delight. You've got to follow that guy. It's bizarre for all the right reasons. But my outside observation for Coach Miles, I don't know him well, talked to him once or twice in media settings, but it seemed to me that he got dragged kicking and screaming to the broadcast booth, and he obviously wanted to coach, and that's truly what he is, even though, you know, he's in his 60s now, and as you say, it's incredible how many guys out there still in their 30s and early 40s, my age, even younger, have some pretty big-time jobs across America. Just your impression about, is he in TV to stay, or is that strictly a way to keep his name in the news? He's going to be interviewing for jobs. He wants to be on that sideline ASAP, and being another John Madden is not really where he wants his career to go.
Yeah, and I asked him that on our show, Hanging with Hester, a couple days ago, and you can tell he's still got that fire in his belly to be a head ball coach, and I think if the right opportunity comes, he'll take it. Now, saying that, I don't think the first person to throw a job at him, he's going to take it. I think his resume and what he's done in his career has allowed him to kind of be picky. And, you know, my conversations with him makes it sound like he's going to be picky. He's not just going to take the first job and just be happy to have a job. It's going to be the right situation, the right fit. Or if it's not, I think he's got an outstanding career in TV, right? Who's more entertaining than having Les Miles get up and use the restroom in the middle of the broadcast?
I mean, it's a short
list.
He's
TV gold, he's Twitter gold, he's radio gold. And so I tell you what, being a part of the media now, I'd love to have him on our team.
All right, let's get you to put your analyst hat back on, because we got to talk about this Bayou Bengals schedule. Chattanooga, Saturday, under the lights, Death Valley, 7:30 kick. And then Mississippi State on the road, that could be interesting. Syracuse, an interesting home-and-home the last couple of years. You get sort of the cupcake in Troy after that. The road trip to Florida, which you didn't anticipate having to make. Then Auburn comes to town at Ole Miss. And then finally a bye before the big battle with the Crimson Tide. That's not an easy slate. I am admittedly down on the Tigers this year. I actually picked them fourth in the West. And a big reason why is the schedule. The flip-flop, because of Hurricane Matthew last year, comes back to bite this year. Again, I'm down on the program in part because of the schedule. As you see the foes as they lay out the next couple of months, where do you think this team is going to go?
Yeah, the schedule, it's hard. It's a murderer's row there for a little bit. And just quickly going over it, as many young guys as they played against BYU, We're talking about 17 true freshmen, I think 22 guys that played their first ever game in the LSU uniform. Having that experience against BYU in the Superdome was huge, because what do you get to do? You get to build on it against Chattanooga. No disrespect to them, but a lot of young guys are going to play in that football game, and Miles Brennan might play the entire second half in that football game, depending on where it's at. So that's going to be valuable that you got those guys in against BYU and now moving forward to Chattanooga. Where it becomes a test is at Mississippi State in Starkville. Hopefully you get Arden Key back from injury, but Nick Fitzgerald's the real deal. I think Mississippi State's flying under the radar. I think they're a team that can beat a lot of people. So that's going to be your first test. And then, you know, Troy, gosh, how many times has people given up on Troy? And they've come and either beaten one of the big boys or come close. And so, yes, you expect to win that game by a lot, but it's not an easy game. But where the schedule really gets tough to me, when you're talking about going to Florida and then coming back home and playing against Auburn, right? That's two of the better teams in the entire SEC. And that's going to be a tough stretch. Those two games right there are going to tell you everything you need to know about the season. Because, yeah, Alabama's the toughest game, but you have a bye. And even if you go into Alabama undefeated, you lose that game in Tuscaloosa, you're still in a pretty good spot. And so, for me, it's the Florida and Auburn games. You got to win both those games, and it's going to be extremely tough to do it.
Yeah, and don't sleep on at Ole Miss right after that. Classic opportunity for a letdown. Last game before the bye. I know all hell is broken loose on Oxford, but that is a team with absolutely nothing to lose. My last question for you, Jacob, you brought him up before I had a chance. Arden Key is a guy we have to talk about. And I'm going to ask sort of a long-winded question here, but one of the things I think college football fans are worried about after one of the new things that's happened the last couple years, where you have some of these high-profile players who are skipping bowl games. Leonard Fournette was one of them. Now, he had a much more justifiable reason than some other players. But guys who are skipping out on bowl games so they can get ready for the NFL, terrified of getting hurt, et cetera, et cetera. And if you carry the conversation forward, there's a lot of people wondering when it's going to happen, where you have a stud sophomore only 2 years removed from high school, still can't enter the draft, is going to get the wrong people in his ear, and he's going to sit out his entire junior campaign because he doesn't want to hurt himself. He's already maybe a top 10 draft pick. I have wondered if that's the conversation we're eventually going to have with Arden Key. I know he was away from the program for one reason or another. He had the shoulder surgery, which you've talked about. He's still coming back from injury. I worry that this is the guy where that's going to happen. I hope I'm wrong. I've written that repeatedly. I hope I'm wrong. I just have this bad feeling in the pit of my stomach that one thing's going to happen, and we're not going to see him in purple and gold all season long. Please tell me I'm wrong, and this young man is going to be back on the field, because he's incredible to watch.
Yeah, and I can see absolutely where you're coming from and where you might believe that, right? And everything that's kind of gone on in Arden Key's all season, you know, could kind of point to that. But I do think he suits up this year. I think he suits up against Mississippi State. Obviously, you will not see him against Chattanooga. And the one reason I think he suits up and plays the rest of the year is because his relationship with Ed Orgeron. He wouldn't be at LSU if it wasn't for Coach O. When Coach O was a defensive line coach and recruited him out of high school, it was Coach O's one recruit that he didn't focus on anybody else but Arden Key when he went and got him. It was kind of a late deal. And so I think that right there helps. But going back to, will a sophomore ever do it? Absolutely. And it's a shame, but it's going to happen. There's going to be a stud sophomore. It's 2 years, you know, and then the third year comes, and he goes, I'm not going to play. I'm just going to sit here. I'm going to be in Scottsdale, Arizona, and I'm just going to work out, right? And it's a shame that that's what it's come to. Every case is different. Like you said, Leonard Fournette had an ankle injury that bothered him all year last year, and that's why he decided to sit out. And then you saw Christian McCaffrey sit out. And so I hope that doesn't become a trend. I agreed with Leonard last year, but that was a unique situation because if you're just sitting out to sit out, that's not the way I was brought up. My dad, my grandfathers are both military Marine guys, and my dad was a cop for 30 years. And so the way I was brought up was, if you've got a challenge in front of you, you go fight it. Doesn't matter if it's a $1 million challenge or a 1 cent challenge. You go and you fight it. That's just the way I was brought up. And so if my teammates are going out there, they're competing, they're going to battle, well, I'm right there with them. It doesn't matter what's at stake. And so I hope that college football doesn't go the other way, but it does seem like it is.
Jacob, thank you so much for joining the program, and enjoy the season, okay?
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime.
That was former LSU running back Jacob Hester. You can hear and see him covering your beloved Bayou Bengals all season long. Remember to follow him on Twitter as well, @JacobHester22. And thank you for listening to the Saturday Down South podcast. Special thanks to our friends at WDAE in Tampa, as well as our sponsors, MyBookie and Ticket City. If you like what you heard, be sure to subscribe on iTunes and all the other services available. You can also give us a rating as well. My name is John Crist, and for all SEC all the time, visit SaturdayDownSouth.com.